Hello and welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns. This is the podcast for people who like to be outdoors but are right now otherwise indoors. I'm recording this on the 29th of May, which is quite a significant day for us up here in Scotland because we're going to hear some guidance from the Scottish Government about what's going to happen with lockdown over the next couple of weeks. I'm not sure how much is going to change, but later on today I'm going to be talking to Heather Morning, who is the safety advisor for Mountaineering Scotland, and she's been in talks with the Scottish Government about just how we're going to manage the outdoors in as we emerge from lockdown. So I guess that's quite important. So if you'll be able to listen to Heather, I'm guessing I'll get that podcast out around about 9 o'clock tonight. So that'll be... if it was pressed, it'd be hot off the press, you know. I'm going to read a short section from Charles Sherwood's fascinating book about the seven of the greatest climbs in the world. I interviewed Charles a few episodes ago, and I wanted really to give you a flavour of his book. So that's coming soon on today's show. I don't know about you, but finding lockdowns dragging a bit in Scotland right now. And, you know, I kind of feel as though I've missed the spring, you know. This is the first time for years that I've not heard a cuckoo. I wasn't around to see the tadpoles in the little pools on the tracks. And I didn't get to sit outside the bothy and watch the house martins. Feeding their young, you know. Those are the sort of little things that amuse me, you know. But I shouldn't moan because there's, you know, a lot of people far worse off than me. A lot of people's livelihoods have been threatened, and you know, I'm just moaning because I can't go out in the hills. Well, you put it in perspective, you know. I've got a lot of mates who are comedians. I don't mean they think they're funny. I mean they go on stage with a microphone, and that's how they earn their living. And their employment has just stopped, so I should just shut up and get on with it. Anyway, here is my little reading from Charles Sherwood's book, Seven Climbs. Seven Climbs, Charles Sherwood. The Challenge. The sun went down at precisely 8:05 p.m., leaving me with just the light of my headlamp. The rope snaked above me into the unknown as I teetered on the tips of my twin axes and the front points of my crampons. I was on the second ice field of the Eigerwand, or, to use its English name, the north face of the Eiger. Climbing this route in the dark might have seemed foolhardy, most especially when lacking any great skill as a mountaineer. But things were okay. The ice was in good condition, soft enough to penetrate with a single swing of the axe, yet firm enough to bear a man's weight. In short, perfect neve, and although the natural light had gone, the ice adequately reflected the beam from my headlamp, easing progress. Then everything became un-okay. The second ice field is prone to ice fall and rock fall, and just then it started to fall apart. There was a flurry above and a large chunk of ice and rock broke free and fell through the dark onto my head. I could do nothing but cling to my tenuous position, resisting the temptation to look up as the debris hurtled over me. One piece gashed my nose. Rather more concerning, another shattered my headlamp, and I was now in true darkness. Such a situation tends to prompt two big questions, intermingled with suitable expletives. What am I doing here? And what am I going to do now? Both occurred in rapid succession, including the expletives. However, I remained essentially calm. The alternative did not appear promising. The first priority was to try to rescue the headlamp, since I had no spur. Fortunately, the ice was so steep and my body pressed against it that the broken pieces, rather than disappearing into the void below, had wedged themselves between my chest and the slope. I collected all those I could find and tucked them into my pocket. Trying to reassemble them then and there was out of the question, but at least there was the hope of getting the headlamp working again later. Secondly, I dug out my small radio and contacted Mark, my partner and guide, who I very much hoped was securely belayed somewhere above me, although I hadn't seen many secure belays thus far. I explained the situation, then up I went. Technical climbing in the pitch dark can be challenging, especially when it's on the north face of the Eiger. But at least ice is better than rock. It's more uniform. In such circumstances, the best strategy follows the proverb about how to eat an elephant. One bite at a time. Just keep making steady progress. I did, feeling my way with each placement. Always 3 points of contact, moving just one limb at a time. It felt a long and lonely climb, but eventually Mark and I were reunited, and serendipitously, the headlamp was repairable, and light was restored. It took us 4 days to scale that face and to get down the other side, but rather than being the end of a journey, it proved to be the beginning of one. An idea had taken root. 2 decades earlier, a pair of American businessmen, Dick Bass and Frank Wells, had set themselves the task of climbing the highest summit on each of the 7 continents. It was an inspiring project, and one recorded in their enthralling book, 7 Summits. Many others since have taken up the challenge. There is even a commercial organisation of the same name dedicated to helping climbers achieve this goal. Such is the popularity of the 7 Summits, that even these 7 easiest routes to the top of each continent are now among the busiest climbing venues of the world. They offer many things, but wilderness is no longer one of them. The encampment at the bottom of Everest and the infamous queues on the mountain summit ridge are just the best known illustrations of what has happened. By contrast, a notable feature of the climb on the north face was its solitude. In those 4 days, we had not seen a single other person. The mountain has a mystique unrivaled in Europe because of its aesthetics and its history. The drama played out on its dark, forbidding face. And yet, its technical difficulty means that it's still climbed infrequently, compared with the popular routes on other high-profile alpine peaks such as Mont Blanc and the Matterhorn. That got me thinking. Could I find similar challenges elsewhere? 7 summits, that represented not the highest but the finest mountaineering objectives on each of the 7 continents. In short, the best 7 climbs in the world. Such a selection would need to reflect mountaineering challenge, natural beauty, and historical context, and to capture something of both the diverse character of each continent and the sheer variety of climbing in all its forms. The choice would, of course, be highly subjective and hugely contentious, but all the better for that. After all, independently spirited mountaineers enjoy little more than a hearty argument. And so began a personal quest.